How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, Hour 3.
Greetings, conversationalists. Welcome across the fruited plain. It's Eric Erickson here. I am delighted to have you with me. The phone number 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, I am delighted to have you on the program. I need to play you some audio. I gotta set the stage for you. Hang on. Where is it? I had this pulled up, y'all. I'm sorry. And then it disappeared on me. All right, here we go. I'm a professional, trust me. Okay. All right. This is from July 13th, 2006. If there is a more biased figure in the televised media than CNN's Wolf Blitzer, I would be interested in finding out who he or she is. Blitzer's interviews today with the Israeli and Syrian ambassadors to the United States on the subject of the escalating war in the Middle East couldn't have been more different. With the Israeli ambassador, Blitzer was solicitous, even posing the incredible question of what can we do about the deteriorating situation? We? Would that be we Israelis or we in the United States? Wolf, Mr. Blitzer, a former FLAC for the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, though you never know it from a CNN bio, has consistently carried on that job in another forum in his capacity as CNN host. He doesn't even try to hide his affinity for his Israeli guests or his partisanship for their cause while turning instantly to prosecutorial mode while questioning any guest who has the dumb luck to be an Arab or a Muslim in King Blitzer's court. It's actually quite stunning how brazen Blitzer's bias has become. At this stage, should not CNN disclose to its viewers Blitzer's background as a stenographer for the powerful lobbying group that holds the whip hand over Republican and Democrat members of Congress alike, and whose role is in a certain series of Iran-related spying cases raises troubling questions about whether foreign agents are operating inside the United States. Blitzer's behavior is not only anti-journalistic, it's irresponsible and transparently ideological. If he wants to do an editorial program promoting the interests of a foreign government, Israel, he should petition his bosses at the network to do just that. Otherwise, if he is purporting to do news, he should stick to the news and put aside his AIPAC flak jacket. That was written by Joy Reid in 2006, pulling out anti-Semitic tropes to attack Wolf Blitzer as a puppet of Israel. You know what's ironic is that I know a lot of Republicans in Washington, D.C. who think that Wolf Blitzer is too pro-Hamas, and I'm not making that up. They actually do think that Wolf Blitzer is overcorrecting biases by being too favorable to Hamas. No Republicans, but Joy Reid, back in 2006, was attacking Wolf Blitzer in anti-Semitic terms, accusing him of being a puppet of AIPAC, shilling for Israel and the like. And now this is Joy Reid last night on her program.
And also, one part of the enthusiasm gap was obviously Gaza. The move, the shift on Gaza, I think, is important. And also, finally naming the villain, which is Bibi Netanyahu. It seems like finally, right? It makes sense.
Naming the villain, Netanyahu. Naming the villain and a shift, a policy shift from the Biden administration on Gaza. This is a network that that did not want to put Ronna McDaniel on, but is willing to have an anti-Semitic, Jew-hating host in the form of Joy Reid, who would criticize Wolf Blitzer as a puppet of Israel. Now, maybe it was the hackers. Remember Joy Reid, it was uncovered in the same blog that she wrote a series of very homophobic pieces, and she claimed that her site had been hacked. That was her excuse. She's never been, everybody knows she's full of garbage, but she claimed it as cancel culture was on the rise, and people pointed this out, and she was afraid she'd get canceled. She's like, no, it's being investigated by the authorities. I think somebody hacked my site. Right. I got a bridge to sell you underwater in Baltimore, Joy. MSNBC's willing to put up with that stuff, but not Ronna McDaniel. Democrats kind of are the enemy of the people, are they not? And, you know, I gotta say as well, I've spent enough time talking about Israel. I'm kind of exhausted on the topic, but there is a real shift that we are seeing in the Biden administration on this, and this is the relevant political portion of it. A very small portion of the Democratic Party, supports Hamas and thinks that we need to back off support of Israel. It's a small portion. It is a very small minority in the United States. Polling-wise, I saw some polling this morning, I think, maybe a quarter of the American public thinks that we're too friendly to Israel. Overwhelmingly, Democrats, Republicans, Independents stand with Israel. One Israel to destroy Hamas. And yet the Biden administration is so scared of the hecklers. He's given them the veto over his policies because he knows it's going to be a narrow election, and he needs all the anti-Semites he can to vote for him. It really is remarkable. But it's remarkable how the Democrats are giving the heckler's veto to a vocal minority. And it is a minority. Now, that's relevant to something else that we need to talk about. There is some incredible polling data I saw from, where is this, Peter Hamby. Peter Hamby writes, used to be at CNN back when I was there. Now he does a thing on Snapchat, writes it at Puck News. Listen to this from Harvard Harris. 73% of voters are fine with the term illegal alien. 73% of voters believe it is appropriate to refer to those who enter the United States without permission as illegal immigrant. I said alien, but immigrant. 68% believe it is appropriate to refer to them as undocumented immigrants. 63% of voters have heard of the story of murdered Georgia nursing student Lakin Riley. 70% believe the case shows the U.S. needs stricter immigration policies. Now let's go back to the State of the Union. Joe Biden has never, to this moment, Joe Biden has never apologized for getting Lakin Riley's name wrong at the State of the Union. He referred to her as Lincoln Riley, the football coach. But within 48 hours on MSNBC, Joe Biden was apologizing for using the word illegal. Called them undocumented. That's not me picking on Joe Biden's stutter. It's me picking on Joe Biden's dementia. The Democrats trying to revise the words we use in this country. The Democrats are trying to weaponize language against us. 73% of Americans are fine with illegal immigrant. I had the pollster ask that they didn't ask illegal alien. I bet 73% of Americans would be fine with illegal alien. You know, the U.S. law, you go to the U.S. code, it references not immigrants, but aliens. Not little green men, but foreigners coming into the country are technically referred to as aliens under American law. Illegal alien is fine. It's not a racist term. It's not a pejorative term. It's a legal definitional term that three quarters of Americans are fine with. But the same people who use the word Latinx, unironically, are the ones upset with using that word. Illegal. They bullied the president of the United States into apologizing for using that word. These are the people Joe Biden is held hostage to. These are the people who Joe Biden thinks he needs to win an election. And that right there is really important for you to understand, because if Joe Biden needs these people as part of his coalition, they're deeply alienating people. I'm sorry, I'm going to say something that's about to offend people, and I'm on video, and someone may beat me up for this. But it's true, and you all know it. And part of my job is to say the things that you're all thinking. But when you are out in public, and it's very rare to see, it is very, very rare to see. But when you see a 6 foot some odd, corn-fed, tall, white woman with a giant Adam's apple and a square jaw and stubble, it's kind of off-putting. You know it is. When you see the former Energy Department dude who stole women's clothes and dressed up as a dog and was highly deviant and braggadocious about his deviant sexual behaviors and wore high heels and dresses and was clearly a dude, it's kind of off-putting. And when you see the Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services doing his best impression of Mrs. Doubtfire, it's kind of off-putting. And it's that sort of stuff that's moving the Democratic Party. It's the odd deviancy is now normal, and if you don't like it, you're a bigot. You can't use illegal immigrant or illegal alien. Shame on you if you do. And my gosh, you should say Latinx, not Latino or Latina, because we need to be inclusive. It's that sort of stuff that drives people insane and out of the Democratic Party. James Carville talked about this to Maureen Dowd the other day and essentially blamed the angry feminists of the Democratic Party. Rush Limbaugh was blaming angry feminists for a long time. I've been blaming the angry feminists, and it's true. And don't call them Karens, because the Karens get mad at you. It's the awfuls. The affluent white female urban liberals, the awfuls, the affluent white female urban liberals. You know exactly who I'm talking about. They're the ones who see that the well-fed, corn-fed, six-something dude with stubble and Adam's apple pretending to be a woman and thinking, oh, yes, she. No, 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 ladies. That is not a she, and your looks yourself should define why you're probably okay with that dude saying he's a she. And using it, looking at you and tut tut, it's undocumented, you small-minded bigot. These people are driving people to the GOP. In particular, they're driving black and Hispanic voters to the GOP. And Joe Biden wants to give this minority of angry awfuls the heckler's veto. He wants to give the anti-Semites from Michigan the heckler's veto. Joe Biden wants to give the loudest, malcontented minorities of the Democratic Party a heckler's veto and control over his policy because he thinks that's going to help him win. And that's the most absurd irony here. And this is the thing that Barack Obama understands. Barack Obama was a progressive, and remember, progressives hate Barack Obama because they think he wasn't progressive enough. Barack Obama was willing to sue nuns to force them to perform or pay for abortions. And yet he sounded moderate in his actions. And the progressives, they don't care about the policy. They care about the feelings. And you got to feel progressive for them to like you, and he didn't. But Joe Biden does, and he's willing to capture that field. In the process, he's alienating a majority of Americans. And this is why all you people who dogmatically insist you hate Trump's guts and everyone else does as well, and there's no way he can win, it's why you're wrong, because you need to go out and find these annoying hecklers in the Democratic Party, and they'll turn you into a Trump voter really quick. Hello, welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. You know, someone sent me a note, and I'm trying to find it. I think they miscited the legislation, but you know, I've gone on my tirade here on my national show about the stupid speed detection cameras outside school zones in the state of Georgia, and somebody sent me a note and said, it looks like the legislature may have passed a fix. I think they should get rid of the cameras altogether. But if they fix it, that's a problem. Now, so some of you are saying, well, why don't you just slow down in front of the school zone? And you're totally, totally missing the issue. So now this is my little bugaboo here in Georgia. I get it. I get it. Those of you outside the state, you don't care about it, but I'll explain it to you anyway. They put up in some school zones of the state speed detection cameras. And the problem is this. Under the law is poorly worded, and the law is meant to read that if you go 10 miles over the speed limit, you can get a ticket. The problem is the schools are using the school zone speed, the 25 mile an hour school zone speed that has the little yellow flashing lights to tell you don't go faster than this. They're using that as the baseline for giving you a ticket and not the actual posted speed limit. And the law is meant to go with the posted speed limit, but some schools are doing the 25. And so the problem is, you know, the number one group of people, the number one class of people getting the speeding tickets, teachers leaving the schools well after hours. Because the schools are given the speeding ticket for you doing 35 and a 25, even though the lights have gone off and the school zone time is no longer in effect. So the teachers leave, say, I can go, the speed limit's 45, I can go 45. Nope, not according to the school, you can't. And so teachers, a mass number of teachers in the state of Georgia are getting these speeding tickets, even though they shouldn't, because the law was poorly written. So they're clarifying the law so that you can't give people a speeding ticket for going more than the school zone speed unless the lights are flashing. Now, good. I hope that's true. I got to go to Old Glory Bank and tell you about them because they're my bank and I love them. Been using them since they opened their accounts. I mean, I'm a day one customer of Old Glory Bank. They have a banking bill of rights. You can go to oldglorybank.com and see it. They're not going to give your information to the federal government. They are not going to close your accounts because they don't like you, your politics, who you do business with. They're not going to prohibit you from using your money to make legal purchases you want to make, even if they might disagree with whoever you're buying from. They're not going to do it. It's a banking bill of rights. A number of banks are debanking people, and Old Glory Bank stands against that. Also, they have no-fee checking and savings, which is why I love them and why my kids love them. Why? We have the kids' accounts with them. You can deposit cash at a bunch of retail locations. Go straight into your accounts if your kids have babysitting jobs. It's just, it's a good bank, y'all. It really is. I have thoroughly enjoyed having an account with them. They're good people. They share your values as well. OldGloryBank.com. You get started in less than eight minutes. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Terms and conditions apply. Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. So I'm going to say friend because I enjoy his company. I do. And he sent me a great note. I hadn't seen him in a while. He makes great beer. He's a beer brewer here in the state of Georgia. Just I enjoy his company every time I get to hang out with him. He sent me a note about my opening monologue. If you weren't here, he was talking about postmodernism and catastrophic thinking. We catastrophize things. We and I'm saying we because I know I do it too sometimes. We begin with the worst case scenario, and it's very hard to ratchet down from there. So he sends me this. He says, we've lost these five razors to postmodernism. Occam's razor. Entities should not be multiplied without necessity. In other words, the simplest explanation is usually the best one. Sagan's razor. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Hitchens razor. What can be asserted without evidence can be dismissed without evidence. Hume's razor, causes must be sufficiently able to produce the effect assigned to them. Hanlon's razor, never attribute to malice that which can adequately be explained by incompetence or stupidity. And that one, my friends, that one right there is one we don't pay attention to enough. You know, I find conservatives these days, it's kind of messy, isn't it? There's a story the other day I meant to talk about called the conservatives. Lena Khan is the head of the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. Her big lawsuit is to sue Amazon.com. She made a big deal out of this. She's suing Amazon. Do you know why she's suing Amazon.com? Because you have to click a button to cancel your Prime account. You have to click a button. You go to a page, you say you want to cancel, and then you must click a button to cancel your Amazon Prime account. I'm not making this up. It sounds absurd. It is absurd. For the record, so I subscribe to several newspapers digitally, including the New York Times. Why the New York Times? Well, because there's frequently big news there, and you got to go behind the paywall to get it. So I have to have it to do show prep for this program. If I want to cancel it, I have to call a phone number and sit on hold and wait for someone to try to dissuade me from canceling it. You don't have to do that with Amazon.com. You just go to the website, click on the cancel button, and then click a couple buttons to say, yes, I really want to cancel this. First of all, who on God's good earth wants to cancel Amazon Prime? I remember when people back in the day, people were trying to get Amazon Prime. In fact, I put some friends on my Amazon account just so they could get access to Amazon Prime because I was one of the beta people for it. And people were like, I want in on Amazon Prime. It's like, what, $99 and you get next day shipping and all this other great stuff and access to it. It's a great deal. But she thinks that Amazon is abusing people by making them click a couple buttons, and so she wants to punish them. And so you know what's happened? There are some Republican members of Congress who are calling themselves conservatives. They are excited to join forces with Lena Khan to destroy big business because they've decided the Republican Party is now the party of the blue-collar worker and screw big business. We're out to get them. You should know Lena Khan's a communist. And I don't mean that pejoratively. She believes that we should take from those who have and give to those who have not, and that is communism. She's a progressive, a secular progressive. So this is my problem. And I do have a problem here. There's a growing movement of people on the right who are willing to cut off their nose to spite their face. They're willing to side with the left to take on forces they don't like, but in the process, they're empowering the left. It's like the scorpion and the frog, and the conservatives are the frog. Going to carry the scorpion across, and the scorpion's going to stab the frog and kill the frog as they're going across the water because it's in the nature of the scorpion to do that. The conservatives are carrying progressives' water for them. The progressives are going to stab you in the back. And what's happening here is you have a lot of unthoughtful people on the right who have confused strategy and tactics. And you know what? In fact, this is one of those things where it's probably best for me to do it this way, to save myself time and energy to just narrate this in this capacity. The difference between strategy and tactics and how you should deploy them. Because strategy is the action plan. Here's what, like, I've got a strategy to grow my radio show. And the individual steps we take are the tactics. And you can take tactics, you can take individual tactics along the way, but if you don't have an overarching strategy, you're not really going anywhere. You're just throwing stuff out there. If you want to think of it conceptually, strategy is a paragraph. And the tactics are the individual sentences in the paragraph. The strategy is your overarching idea. I'm going to dominate talk radio by doing these things. Some of these Republicans on Capitol Hill, they want to get big business. They think big business has gone woke, and they're willing to ally with a communist progressive who wants to destroy big business for the sake of the progressive collective, and they're willing to ally with her because they see they're accomplishing the same ends, except they're not really accomplishing the same ends. And so they're empowering her and setting precedents for her and growing this. And it's so unthoughtful. It makes my head hurt. These people have confused strategy and tactics. And so there are no long-term goals. It's the here and now. It is the lack of impulse control. And we on the right, if we're led by these people, we're going to be in a world of hurt with an even more empowered left, because these guys are empowering the left because they have the same enemies right now. The left is going to turn back on you with all the precedents you set. It reminds me of that clip from the movie, but it's also from the play of what was Sir Thomas More, where they argue with him about cutting down the forest to attack the devil, and they say, yes, I would level the entire forest to get to the devil. And Sir Thomas More, Manfrost is his name, he says, and when the time comes that you clear the whole forest and the devil turns around and comes for you, what will stand between you and the devil? Nothing. And that's what these people on the right are doing. It's so frustrating. All right. To the phones. Bob, I'm going to go to you first. Welcome to the show, Bob. How are you?
Hey, thank you, Eric. I really enjoy your show.
Thanks. What's going on?
Well, you talked about automated speed enforcement in school zones, and I just want to clarify a couple points. Under Georgia law, that school zone speed in the morning and the afternoon can only be 10 miles an hour less than the posted speed limit. So, for example, if posted is 45, you can only go down to 35, not 25. So it's not a steadfast rule, 25. If it's 35, of course, it'll be 25.
Right.
Secondly, that in terms of the enforcement has to be for the posted speed limit before the morning and the afternoon, not the lower speed limit. Thirdly, flashing lights are not required in Georgia. The sign does have to post the time, and sometimes it'll say when flashing, but it's not a requirement you have flashing lights. So what I'm getting at, though, is in clarifying Georgia's automated speed enforcement, it does well to have people follow the law for what the speed limits are in one of the most vulnerable areas. We have a lot of pedestrians, school crossing guards, kids, families, and whatnot. Schools are centers. They're places where people go. And if we can't be safe around them from what is probably the most dangerous thing we do, which is driving, then where else should we do it? So.
Well, okay, but now there's a legit problem, Bob, and this gets to the point that you've highlighted. So everything you said is true. The problem is, and like I've seen this, I have experienced this now with my own family. Now I've yet to get one of these, but my wife got one, and we had to contest it. And it is that I lost too many, and we've had a flood of callers who sent me copies of their tickets. They're getting tickets. It's happened in Cherokee County. It's happened in Gwinnett County. It's happened to a lot of friends of mine here in Bibb County. They're getting tickets not for the posted speed, going 10 miles over the posted speed limit, but going 10 miles over the posted school zone speed limit outside of the time of day where that should be in effect.
Yeah. Okay. That is, in my opinion, as a lawyer who have read closely that statute, I think that's unlawful as it's currently written. And those companies should be sanctioned for that.
Yes, this is my point. I kind of do, because I think it's a tax on poor people, because here's the dirty little secret. I've now had three different judges in the state tell me if you send a letter and say you're contesting the ticket, they're going to cancel your ticket in almost every case they do it. And poor people don't know to do that. But literally, this is my problem. If we keep the speed limits, and I think they're going to, they're not going to get rid of them. But literally, Bob, I'm not making this up. I have a list right here on my desk I'm looking at of the names of 16 teachers who've all sent me copies of their tickets. They're leaving school after 5 p.m. and they're getting speeding tickets for going over 25 miles an hour when they're actually
– and that's wrong. Eric.
Yeah, and I've told all of them to, like, contest it. Yeah, that's the problem I have. Everybody thinks I'm like, oh, you're just – well, I am, but I don't think we're going to get rid of them. But yeah, to your point, it is – it's these teachers. I mean, again, I got 17 copies of tickets, and they're literally all, like, after 5 and 6 p.m.
Yeah, and it's like if you have an officer that's not properly enforcing the law, there should be sanctions associated with that. And same here. And so the idea, though, that teachers are being ticketed after hours, that's against the law. And
yes.
By the way, the law absolutely allows, if you're not the driver, all you have to do is send in an affidavit and say it wasn't me, and the court has to accept that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I've got a moral opposition to them because they're a tax on poor people. Because again, like I know, and Bob, you know, you can send the letter, and you're gonna get out of it. And one federal, two state judges have told me all you got to do is send in a letter and say you contest it, and they're gonna ditch it. But the poor person doesn't know. But let's also be clear here. To Bob's point about these are like almost like sacred congestionaries. Y'all, every single school that I pass that has these cameras, the school's set back and the school is far back from the road. The kids are not in the streets. You don't ever see kids out on the streets, and yet we're doing it. This is, let's be honest, this is a revenue scheme. It is a revenue scheme. And you talk to the local officials, they're pretty honest it's a revenue scheme. It has nothing to do. We can spin it as it's to keep the children safe. But this is a revenue scheme. This is a revenue scheme. Doug, you're going to be the last caller. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Eric. I appreciate that. I don't know if you got pre-screened on this, but another unintended consequence of the, I'll just call it, it's a radar machine, more or less, out in front of the school that happened in our area. A local elementary school has one of these signs posted out there. And the unintended consequence is the teenagers are posing that as a challenge. And the challenge that they have interpreted is they're doing their best to go as fast as they can past that and take a picture of it and post it on one of their social sites. And there was an accident a few weeks ago where three teenagers, seniors at a local high school, were involved in an accident, and one of them ended up dying. One of them is probably going to be going to jail for manslaughter charges.
Wow.
Because they were trying to go past that sign at 100 miles an hour and a 35 mile an hour speed limit.
Wow.
Awful.
Good grief. Doug, first of all, that's horrible, and thank you for sharing, elected officials in the state of Georgia, multiple ones at the same time, are texting me. All know who Bob was. But also, all of them are saying, yes, we're more and more aware it's a money-making scheme. Some members of the legislature, they're pushing a fix on it. And I hope it has passed, y'all, because it really is. Listen, I get, as for the children, we could justify everything. But, man, this is a revenue-making scheme. And if you're intellectually honest, you know it's a revenue-making scheme. It has nothing to do with the children. Because, like, the one school that I pass on the most, there aren't even sidewalks in front of school. It is impossible to walk in front of the school, and it's at a massive setback. You can't even see the building, but you got the camera there around the curb. Coincidentally, where the speed limit goes down in front of the school, yeah, it's a scam. But again, the big issue here, forget the cameras, forget the speeding, the objections, it's a scheme to tax poor people, particularly non-white voters. It really is targeting non-white citizens more than anything. It's all of the people who I know who are getting the tickets are getting tickets for driving faster than the school zone speed limit outside the time that the school zone speed limit is in effect. And that is, as Bob said, actually against the law. But people don't know to write and contest it. They don't know where to go. So they pay the fine. It's a revenue scheme. Now, it's a no-brainer for you to save money. This is a revenue scheme to save you money. It's not even a scheme. It's legit. Because I've used Stamps.com for 20-some-odd years, on or off, over 20 years. They've only been around for 25 years. I was an early adopter of Stamps.com. If you go to Stamps.com, you click on the microphone, you put in Eric, E-R-I-C-K, you can get a free offer, a free digital scale, limited or free postage from stamps.com, and you don't have a contract to sign. You do not have a contract to sign. You do not have to make a long-term commitment. You can cancel it any time, but you're saving up to 89% off post office and UPS rates at stamps.com. When you go to stamps.com, you click the mic, you put in Eric, you start a relationship with him. All you need is a mobile device, your computer, printer. You can print labels. You can order shipping supplies from stamps.com, and you save a lot of money, and you never have to stand in line because you can arrange pickup at your home or office for your packages. So you don't have to actually take them to the post office or the UPS store. You can just get them to come to you, and it saves you money, saves you time, saves you from standing in line. It's that easy. Stamps.com, click the mic, put in Eric, E-R-I-C-K, get shipping and saving today. Hello and welcome. It's Eric Erickson, my friends. If you're listening over in South Carolina right now, have I got a story for you. Y'all just won the lottery. Lawmakers in South Carolina have discovered a state bank account that has $1.8 billion with a B dollars in it. Officials have no idea where the money came from or what it was intended to fund. Can you imagine? I mean, your state has $1.8 billion sitting in a bank account, and nobody's got any idea where the money came from, who put it there, why it's there, what it's for, where it came from. The governor, Henry McMaster, assured the public on Tuesday that no money was lost. No, no, sir. No, sir. Money was found. The bank account seems to be the result of ongoing accounting troubles from the state arising from a computer system transition in the late 2010s. Oh, yeah, it is from some accounting troubles. That's for sure. They've established a special investigative committee to figure out where the money came from. Leading the effort will be Larry Grooms, a Republican senator, who likens the situation to going into your bank and the bank president tells you you got a lot of money in the vault. We just don't know who it belongs to. Wow. So apparently there was a computer rollover years ago, and every time the state's books were out of whack, money had to be shifted around. And it went into this account. Y'all, $1.8 billion the state of South Carolina's just had sitting in a bank account they didn't even know existed. That is wild. My goodness. God bless you people in South Carolina. Y'all just got a windfall that you've had the whole time and didn't even know.